had to go about it, write it out and find it myself. And there's some stories I can tell you. I had to fail, had to fall, just for what I did well. And there's some stories I can tell you. I had to go about it, write it out.
Just sit up a bit. So comfortable and relaxed. This is the Final Word Daily. Australia, South Africa, the MCG, day three. Jeff Lemon, Bharat Sundaresan with you. First of all, well, the whole day of Test cricket happened, minus a little bit for rain, and you have to tell us all about it in 30 seconds.
Technically, I should have only 22 seconds because we didn't have the full day's play, but I'll take my 30 seconds. It was a day when Alex Carey finally got to raise his bat and be a Test centurion. It was a day when David Warner walked off raising his bat even though he faced only one ball. It was a day when Cameron Green batted with a fractured finger. It was a day where Mitchell Starc bowled with a bleeding finger. Eventually, it was a day which we've seen before. Australia dominate. Australia scored a lot of runs. And an interesting declaration. They batted for much longer than we thought they would. But they had enough time to get rid of Dean Elgar, but it was also a day which saw a lot of rain. So, you know, we still have to come back on day four and hopefully for the final time during this Boxing Day test.
I think you've blown well past the 30, but, you know, you got it the other day. You landed right on 30 the other day.
Generally, when I get really excited and start going, that's when I realize midway through that, oh, God, I haven't said what the match situation is.
We have to tailor it. For Bharat, it's a 60 seconds. For Daniel Norcross, it's a 120 seconds.
Oh, so that is true as well. Like, at least I'm 60, Norcross. Yeah. Uh-huh.
So, look, a little bit of rain. They started 15 minutes late. And for a minute, not right away, but after about 10, 15 minutes of play, there was a period where you thought, well, this could be really exciting. Yeah. Australia resume, 197 in front. Travis Head gets to his half century quickly, and then it's Nokia time again. And this whole test match has basically been Anurag Nokia almost single-handedly trying to drag South Africa into the game. He gets the ball to Jag off the seam, back into Travis Head, smashes the pad back onto the stumps, out. David Warner comes out. He's been resting overnight, you know, retired on 200 even yesterday with cramps. He's ready to go. He comes out, bang, bold first ball that he faced from Nokia. Again, smashes into the pad. This time it's the fuller ball. The Yorker swinging into him a bit, hits the pad back onto the stumps. 2-2, hat-trick ball. Cummins survives it. Then Cummins is out a couple of overs later, nicking Rabada, or maybe nicking Rabada. I wasn't entirely convinced by the DRS on that. But they're six down for 400 Australia, and that should have been eight down, because you're thinking, well, Green and Starc won't bat. They've both got damaged fingers, and that seems to be the case when Nathan Lyon comes out. He bashes 25, puts on a partnership of 40 with Carey, who's still going, and then when he slaps one to mid-wicket, Cameron Green does come out to bat after all. Surprise for everybody, but probably the South Africans more than anyone were like, oh, come on. Surely we got rid of this guy.
Yeah. And I think Alex Carey was the most surprised. He said so as well just now in the press conference, that he didn't expect his best friend, I think, in the team, Cam Green, to a new best friend, I should say. Travis Head might take umbrage to that, but to walk out to bat. But he did. He showed a lot of courage. And I'm sure we'll speak about Cam Green and Alex Carey, the partnership, a little while later. But you're right. Anurag Nokia deserved wickets yesterday. Unfortunately, he just got one. He's been the standout performance. It's like one man versus an entire 11. Kagiso Rabada, the bowling coach, Charles Langefeld, just said, has blown hot and cold during this series and also during this match. But Anurag Nokia, ball after ball, over after over, he's just bowled his heart out. And he deserved those two wickets, and what celebrations as well. He knocks over Travis Head, the ball after Travis Head's got to yet another 50 by pulling a ball for four. And
For two,
I thought it was four. There you go. I just got excited. Because it's a South Australian, and South Australian hit boundaries. I think he got the line perfectly right. And I don't think the rest of the South Africans bowled well enough to Travis Head. They just kept giving him width yesterday, and he just feasted on them. Beautiful length, really quick. And also, if you notice, because of the rain early on, there was still a little bit of moisture, so the ball also skid through. So Travis Head was really late on the ball. And David Warner comes out for the standing ovation. And before the 40,000 or 25,000 around the MCG could sit down, he's knocked over. A beautiful Yorker actually hit David Warner's leg on the full and smashed into the stumps. And an even wilder celebration from Ulrich Knocke. And just like that, David Warner got to do what he didn't get to do yesterday, which is walk off with everyone cheering. And firstly, walk off, not like limp off and just follow the
not get carried off.
Literally. Yeah. But yeah, it was at that point, you're right. I thought Australia will either be bowled out in the first hour, or maybe in the first session, or definitely Australia will maybe look to declare, because when Nathan Lyon walked out at number 8, which in itself could be a Hall of Fame nomination, which it won't be because I mentioned it, you really thought the way he was batting as well that the end was nigh. But it wasn't to be. The end came much, much later. But also, I feel, Jeff, that partnership, right, between Nathan Lyon and Alex Carey kind of just took the fizz out. If at that point, imagine if those were the last 2 wickets of the Australian innings, the South Africans would have felt a little uplifted. But yeah, it wasn't to be. And then Australia batted for much, much longer than that.
Well, I mean, yeah, it could have been. It could have been near the end if you thought, well, you know, Nokia can smash through Lyon, they knock over Scott Boland, they're done. And yeah, Australia would have been 200 in front and still a chance to win by an innings, really. And we know that this South African batting lineup is poor. But there would still be the possibility. You would still, if you were South Africa at that point, you could say, well, if we play really well, the batting deck is still good. You know, if we take our time, maybe we get a couple of hundred in front. Maybe we can test them out in the fourth inning, something like that. Instead, Australia just go on and on and on. And initially, I mean, Cameron Green was batting really slowly. In the way, and I thought it was like he played in his first season. So when he came into Test cricket the first time against India, he just blocked basically everything. Yeah. It's like he couldn't even remember how to play a shot. And basically he was just scared of getting out. He was like, oh shit, I'm playing Test match cricket. I have to not get out. I have to be a Test cricketer. And then he managed to move past that, you know, in the Ashes last year, in Pakistan earlier this year. He played much more aggressively. He played aggressively for that short but important innings in Brisbane, even in the previous Test match. And then it seemed like today, because he was preoccupied with the injured finger, he was just worried about staying in. But that kind of worked, because Carey was scoring quickly at the other end, not going crazy, not hacking into the bowling, but just picking up one and two here, or one and a two and a one, three or four off and over. And then once in a while, he'd lay into a boundary when he saw a ball that he liked. You know, if it was short and wide, he was uppercutting, he was pulling balls down to fine leg. He drove a few down the ground, he drove a few through the covers. So he was picking up a boundary here and there. And it was like, well, they were scoring quickly enough that they could afford to have Cameron Green playing the way he did. But he played defensively so well. What I admired was quickly they get Nokia back on and they say, bowl at his gloves. Yeah. Like, okay, if you want to come out here and bowl with a broken finger, fine. Mm-hmm. If you think you're fit to bowl, we'll try to hit you on the gloves. And, you know, some people might take umbrage at that, but I think that's fair enough at this level of sport. But he played that really well. He got his hands up high. He came over the ball. He dropped all of those balls straight down at his feet, and he wasn't troubled by a single ball from Nokia, which was super impressive, I thought.
Oh, very much so. And I think, yes, he did play defensively, but it also had a lot to do with that injury. Because it's the index finger on his right hand, the bottom hand, he was really struggling to play horizontal shots, because the bottom hand comes into play, as you can imagine. Mm. But every time,
anything with power, really.
Obviously, he couldn't. There was one pull shot he attempted of Kagiso or Rabada where the ball just kind of popped over mid-wicket. But whenever they bowled full to him, he looked very, very good on the drive. And just speaking to Simon Kadich and others who played with broken fingers, apparently the painkiller also takes kind of half an hour to kick in. So once it kicked in, you saw he was playing a lot of shots. Even the shot that he got to his 50 with just backing up and uppercutting Marco Jansen over gully or towards the third man boundary. So he did come into his own, but it was a beautiful partnership. And beautiful partnership between Alex Carey and Cam Green, not just because of the way they batted, but they formed such a lovely bromance off the field. They talk about being the engine room at number 6 and number 7, the engine room of the lower middle order. And Alex Carey almost comes across as like a bigger brother to him. I've seen them off the field.
A smaller, bigger brother.
Yeah, you can't be a bigger brother to Cam Green unless you're Marco Jansen. But Marco Jansen's a year younger, so that doesn't work out either. But he's kind of taken him under his wings in a way. But I wouldn't even say taken him under his wings. They're still like kind of, Cam Green might have played more test matches than Alex Carey. But they have this beautiful bromance brewing. And if you notice, when Alex Carey gets to his 100, I'm sure the clips have done the rounds, it's Cam Green who celebrated first. His hands went up. And then once he was done with that, he asks Alex Carey finally gets to take his helmet off. Cam Green sprints across, gives him a bear hug, and once again punches the air as Alex Carey raises his bat. And I asked Alex Carey about it in the press conference, and he said, if there's one man I wanted out there when I make my maiden turn, it was Cam Green. It was really sweet. And on Alex Carey as well, it was a superb innings. And people might just see the scorecard and say, oh, South Africa were down and out, and Alex Carey just played a wicketkeeper's innings coming down the order and played a lot of shots. He came out to bat when Nokia was breathing fire from his nostrils. That second celebration after he got David Warner out, he was a... Like, there's this Jekyll and Hyde with Nokia. We see him in press conferences laughing a lot and looking all happy. But once he gets that ball going, that mustache starts looking... Like, it's almost like it just kind of, automatically. Kind of, yeah.
It's like it's going to come off his face and, like, run to the crease first, almost.
Especially when he's in that mood, like he wasn't. But Alex Carey played him brilliantly. He was the one guy who was not troubled by the pace or anything that Nokia did. He seized off that spell. Lion gives him some company. And he played some outstanding shots. Some of the drives he played down the ground of all the bowlers were really, really good. But arguably his best test innings. He missed out on the 100 in Karachi. We were there when he was bowled by Babar Azam.
Yeah.
You'll remember. So he hadn't forgotten about it. And he just said maybe at that point he thought the test 100 is never coming. But he got this chance. And on Boxing Day, or in a Boxing Day test, the MCG makes it.
Something about those drives where it's like he gets on the front foot. He gets his feet well apart, but then he leans back. So his front foot's forward, but he leans back and then really powers through the drive, thrashes through the drive. It's quite idiosyncratic. I haven't seen... there's certainly no other player currently who plays a straight drive in that kind of way, you know, almost a diagonal bat straight drive. And then he can apply that through the covers as well, which is different to some of the... He can play that more compact, correct cover drive. But this was... I think because the outfield was a bit wet as well, he was laying into the ball more perhaps to try to put more power on it. I'm not sure. But yeah, he gets his 111. Australian wicketkeepers haven't made one since Haddon at Adelaide in 2013. So that's nearly 10 years between tons. And they have this long partnership. And there was a lot of, they should declare, Chad. Can I just say, I don't understand this at all. It was day three of a test match. And I think back to actually to Dean Elgar in Johannesburg in 2018 when it was the fourth day and they were 400 ahead or whatever it was. And he was asked about why they hadn't declared earlier. And he said, there's no rule that says we have to finish it in 4 days. Yeah, exactly. He's like, we have 5 days. The weather is good. Yeah. Like, we're allowed to take the duration. Exactly. So it seemed strange to me to say, oh, okay, you're 250 ahead, you're 300 ahead on the third day and you should declare. It's like Australia have three fit bowlers. You know, they had Green and Stark who were in theory not supposed to be able to bowl, although we'll come to that later. Yeah. And if South Africa got something going, if they put a partnership together, then they might be able to start tiring out three bowlers and they might be able to start getting on top. So the thinking is, why even give them a chance of that? You know, why not leave them 400 runs behind? Why not leave it absolutely impossible for them to get a lead of any significance? And why declare also when you've got a couple of players who've barely played this summer in Carey and Green, who've barely batted, and if Green says that he's happy to take the risk for the injury, I mean, I could also see the logic of saying, why risk it? Why risk getting hit and having it become worse? And that also makes sense. But if he's saying he wants to bat, he's barely batted in first-class cricket for about a year. You know, since Australia's overseas tours anyway, didn't play Shield because he was the bench rider in the T20 World Cup squad. And Carey has barely batted in this test summer as well. So why not give them the opportunity? Isn't it better to have the chance for Green to make another 50, for Carey to make his first 100, for them to have the confidence from that, for them to have another good partnership, all of the benefits that come from that outside the immediate what's going to happen in this match? It made perfect sense to me to wear out South Africa, make them stay in the field for another couple of sessions, really push them to the floor. And I think they only ended up declaring because when Stark was batting later, after Carey had been dismissed, he got hit in the head. Not a bad blow, but that was when they thought, well, it's getting a bit dark out there and maybe we should bring our guys in and put South Africa out there.
Yeah, I think it's only at that point. When you saw Mitchell Stark walk out to bat, even I was a little confused with why Australia weren't declaring, because by then you could see every player had four shadows emerging from him, you know, and that's a sign that the light was still good enough, because they had Marco Jansen bowling from one end and Henrik Nokia bowling from the other end. So the tallest and the fastest bowler were allowed to bowl, which meant that the umpires felt the light was perfectly fine for cricket to go on. But when Stark came out to bat, you wondered why that was happening, because it was also the timing. I think there was half an hour left for the tea break, and if Australia had declared then, they would have got 20 minutes in perfect bowling conditions against this South African top order, and thereby, you know, giving their fast bowlers 3 or 4 overs and then keeping them fresh for a second burst right after the break, and then obviously playing it out for the rest of the session and maybe tomorrow morning. But also at this point, we do not know about Stark's bowling condition, whether he was going to bowl. We saw some clips of him bowling in the nets on television from earlier in the morning, right after the rain subsided. But then when I saw him come out and start looking at his landing area with the umpires, I was like, wow, okay, Mitchell Stark is going to bowl. And then when he started warming up, I was like, Mitchell Stark's going to take a new ball. And he did. And the bleeding finger I spoke to you about, that came from bowling at full speed. And Alex Carey just said, apparently Alex Carey looked at Uzi Khawaja and said, what paces do you expect Stark to bowl at? And he was bowling at 140 to 145. The ball was flying and Alex Carey was collecting it well above his above his chest. So Stark was bowling at full tilt, but then we did see him at the end of every over, as he was walking back, obviously he can't have the bandage on because he was injured.
Yeah, so you're not allowed to have any tape on your bowling hand. And so he, in trying to take a catch, his finger had been smashed into by the ball, and it had bashed up that fingernail. So the fingernail was broken. That's where the blood was coming from. The bone isn't broken, but he had some sort of ligament damage that they picked up on a scan. But he figured that he was okay enough to at least try a couple of overs with the new ball, and the exertion of that was making it bleed, and then he was drying it off on his trousers and on the towel in the waistband.
Yeah, it was red all over, right? Like, yeah, if you saw the area near his pockets on the left-hand side was all bloodied. The towel was bloodied. But he was fighting through the pain, and he bowled really, really well. He easily could have got a wicket.
Weirdly, nobody criticizing his body language today.
Yeah, you know, that's just Mitchell Stark, right? Like, they want Stark to smile all the time. They want Stark to look up for the game, battle.
Stop smiling. He looks too happy. He should look angrier.
Hey, no, everybody has a say on what Mitchell Stark should look like. It's or what expression he should carry while he's on the field. It's funny how that works out. But, you know, he really put his, I wouldn't say body on the line, but his hand on the line for Australia. I don't know whether he's going to come back and bowl tomorrow. Maybe he will. But the wicket went to Pat Cummins. Dean Elgar, he's had a disappointing series.
That's one way of putting it.
I know. I mean, he's come and said a lot of things. He's, you know, called his bowling attack the best in the world, but not used them at all like the best attack in the world. We called his captaincy woeful yesterday, and it continued to be that. And he's been getting out. He's the senior captain, but also the senior most batter. If you keep getting out the same way, it's, you're not unlucky when you're like just edging a ball down the legs. It's a clear strategy. You keep playing at it and you keep getting out. I mean, he has had a series to forget, but he keeps coming out to these press conferences and talking a good game, but he hasn't backed it up at all.
So they end up 371 runs behind South Africa, 1 for 15 when rain started. That means they'll start on the fourth day. We'll start early, half an hour early on the fourth, and if we get to a fifth on the fifth, 371 behind, 9 wickets in hand, a long road from here. Final word, Hall of Fame for the day. When we pick our most final word moment of the day, woodstockcricket.co.uk. If you want 20% off the best bats in the world, TFW20. Put that in at the checkout. Nice and easy. Yes. Anything that jumped out at you? There were so many moments today. I mean, the near hat trick was one. The fact that, for listeners of The Final Word, you'll know that Adam Collins has never seen a test hat trick. And the fact that he'd left the country just before this test match. No, I was thinking if ever it was going to be today, if ever it was going to be any day, it would be today that Nokia would have picked up the third and knocked over Pat Cummins.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I was expecting it as well, especially because Pat Cummins has been rattled by the pace, and you could see he was backing away as he just like fended at that ball, just defended it, bat came down at the right moment. Yeah, I mean, Adam Collins was tweeting about it as well. He expected it to happen just because he wasn't there. Hall of Fame for me, two things that stand out. One is when Mitchell Stark did cop the blow on the helmet. He immediately looked at the dressing room and started doing this. Like, he was telling Pat Cummins, I think we should be bowling out here, if you noticed.
He could have been saying, I think you should sub me out of the game for a fit bowler.
Maybe he was. But the way he was bowling after that with a bloodied finger, maybe he just wanted ball in his hand. And it was this weird thing. The concussion test happened and Pat Cummins was just sitting there while the concussion test was going on. And then suddenly he just got up and he had the walkie-talkie in his hand and he started waving at the Australian or his batters to come off. And the other one was, I'm not sure what really happened, but there was this couple who was shown on the big screen, I think having a little bit of a cuddle. Mm-hmm. And then the players just stopped, like everyone from, and Paul Rifle is known to be people who played with him, people who know him well. Apparently nothing cracks him up. But Paul Rifle could not concentrate. He just burst out laughing. And play actually stopped for a minute because the bowlers were laughing, the batters were laughing, the umpires were laughing. And at this point, it was just two people just caught in a moment.
Well, okay. So what it was is they're sitting there. The guy's got his arm around the woman. And then when he realizes they're on the big screen, he gets shy and pulls his arm away and sits in his own chair. So, of course, the speculation is that maybe he's not supposed to be there with that particular person. Maybe it should be someone else. Then the camera comes back to them 5 minutes later and his arm is back. And then he leaves it there, but they both look very uncomfortable and kind of try to read their magazines without showing their faces. And then another couple of minutes later, the camera cuts back and she's gone, and it's just this guy sitting there on his phone,
tapping away on his phone. And I actually noticed, like, there was a drinks break soon after. Kyle Zondo and Kyle Verena were walking, and they were talking about it as well. Like, I couldn't obviously hear what they were saying, but they were talking about it as well. It was quite funny. And then a while later, the camera went back in that direction. There was neither of them were there. And a few minutes later, the camera was back, and there was this old guy sitting there just having a ball of a time. So it was weird. For his sake, I just hope everything's fine, to be honest. It was interesting.
A last nomination for David Warner as well. 200 not out, coming off the field yesterday. 200 not out, coming back on the field today. 200 out. Off he goes. A ball later. That's cricket. Sometimes you're up. Sometimes you're down. We will be up again tomorrow on day 4 because this is a daily show and that's how it works. If you want to help us keep making these programs, patreon.com/thefinalword. That is the place to get involved and get involved with our online chat community as well. Lots of good fun happening in there. Jeff Lemon, Bharat Sundaresan, we'll be back on day 4. See you then. I ain't protected, brother, I ain't fenced in. If my future questions my current senses, that'd be the same we've been doing for centuries. Sorry if I ran out to empty, wrote this so you know what I meant here. I had to go.